One of the best parts about having nephews about 2.5 and 6 months old is you get to have sleepovers when your wife is out of town. But the hard part is that they're like snot factories, right? So I woke up Friday morning in the top bunk of my nephew's bunk beds, and I was sick. Like, I could hardly move my throat. So hopefully the raspy voice won't throw you off too much today. But comparison. You know, I went to high school with a kid. His name is DJ. And he graduated top of our class, went to Notre Dame on a full ride. And he graduated top of class in Notre Dame and then went on to Harvard, where he graduated top of his class in Harvard with the MBA. DJ then went on to work for Angie's List, which you may have heard of, and really brought Angie's List to the next level. And then now he and some friends from Harvard created one of the biggest microfinance organizations in the world. And he's the COO living in Johannesburg, South Africa. Or there's another guy that I grew up with, and it seemed like Jake was always a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, a little bit better than I was. He was a little younger than me, but he went on to play college football. And he started all 4 years as a running back, and I kind of fizzled out in high school in sports. Or there's my younger brother, who I just mentioned, his sons. I'm 11 months older than him, and we've always kind of compared or competed to be the best, and I'm 30 and just got married and have no kids, and he's 29 and has two kids and has been married for 5 or 6 years and has a big house in the suburbs with a picket fence and 2.5 kids. You know, he has the perfect life, and I don't think they have half a kid, but they do have a picket fence, but in the backyard. Or there's another guy in town, another pastor who's younger than me and always been a little ahead of me, and he's been a pastor longer than I've been, and he works just down the street, but he and his wife, they live in like the hip part of town, and I don't know how they afford the apartment that they live in, but nevertheless, they're living in Cap Hill, and I'm living over here, and he's just an excellent communicator, and the way he dresses, man, he's always just a little bit cooler and a little bit trendier than I am, and I don't know why that is. But comparison, you know, it's a hard, hard thing. And I think we all have these hot button items that really get to us. And I don't know what it is for you. Maybe it's comparison in your work life or your success in work. It's newcomers have come into your industry and they've been working less than you, but they're making more than you. And they're higher on the ladder than you already. And you compare yourself to him or her and you wonder, why can't I be like that? Or maybe for you, it's being a parent. Your kids are crazy and shoving ketchup up each other's noses, and you look across the street and their kids are like the miniature Pope, right? Like, they're fasting 3 days a week and reading the Bible every day. They wake up rolling out of bed, flipping their Bible open. You're like, what do I have to do to get my kids to act that way? Or maybe it's popularity or success. It's how many followers you can get on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it might be. Or maybe it's money for you. You just work, 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 trying to make more money, and there's that person out there. It's kind of the carrot that's dangling in front of you. You think, man, if I could just make a little bit more money. Or maybe it's image. Maybe you look online or look in a magazine or you just look across the street at a friend and you notice that person, they're just a little more muscular or a little skinnier than you. Or man, their clothes, they're so much cooler than I am. Or lastly, maybe it's life stage. Maybe you're single and you've always thought you'd be married by now. Or maybe you're married and you look and you see all of your single friends having fun and you see them posting pictures of drinking pina coladas every night and going to the coolest concerts and restaurants. And you're like, man, what I would do to just go back out again with my friends, but I'm too tired. Cleaning up diapers and crayons on the walls. See, we all compare. It's Christians, non-Christians, people inside the church, people outside the church. We all compare, and sometimes we just end up thinking it's not fair. See, when comparison controls our lives, it does all sorts of things to us. We lose sleep, we overwork, we work too hard, we stay too late, we just overspend money that we don't have, or maybe it's an eating disorder, fighting with our friends, our coworkers, our family, our loved ones, whatever it is. I don't know about you, but oftentimes when I get caught up in this comparison, I lose sleep, or it starts a cycle in my mind, and I go to bad places, and I think I'll never be good enough. I'll never be whatever enough. And it doesn't lead me to the best of places. You know, I think we all compare our lives to others for one simple reason. It's because we want to know whether or not we're winning in life. But let me ask this, what does winning in life even look like? What does it look like for you? Is it being the best mom in the world? Is it being seen by your peers as successful or funny or dependable? Or maybe winning life for you is making the most amount of money that you can so you can buy the most amount of toys and have the best jet ski or dirt bike or whatever it is. But let me ask this question. How do you gauge whether or not we're winning in life? And I think if we're honest, we'd all say that there's probably one or two people in our life, I don't know about you, but for me, there's one or two people in my life that are kind of always out there that I'm comparing myself to. See, if we're doing better than them, then we're winning at life. Or if we're doing worse than them, well, we have room to improve and we can get better. So who are those people in your life? Are there one or two people that you're constantly comparing yourself to? I don't know if you know this, but many of us, when we graduated high school, it was the last time we would see 90% of the people in our class. As soon as we walked across that stage and picked up our diploma and turned the tassel to the other side of the hat, it was like we wouldn't see 90% of the people in our class forever. There was that weird, awkward kid in chemistry class, and we'll call him Johnny, and as soon as you graduated, you never had to see Johnny again in life. But now with the beautiful invention of social media, we're so connected to Johnny that we can't get away from awkward chemistry kid Johnny. Like, we know what he had for breakfast. We know what his opinion is on Obama's latest health care policy. Or we know that Johnny somehow made it, and he's married to the most beautiful woman in the world and has two little perfect angel children. You see, technology, like it or not, has us at a place in our life where we compare beyond measure. What once was something that we did from time to time, and that 10% of high school class we would see from time to time and maybe see each other at a reunion, but now it's an obsession. It's not just high school students that we graduated with, it's kids from college or people in our church or people in our job place. See, there's lots of reasons that we compare, but I think if we think about it, there's three main reasons that we compare. We'll throw these up on the screen for you, but the first is that we compare to determine whether or not we're being successful in life. The second is we compare to find out whether or not we're being faithful in life. And lastly, we compare to determine whether or not we're making the best out of this one life that we've been given. But here's the irony. Even though we compare ourselves in an effort to win at life, the more we do it, the more likely we are to lose. In fact, I would argue that, and we're going to transition here to see what a really wise man once had to say about comparison, but I would argue that the more we compare, the more we lose. So we're going to look today in the chapter or the book of 1 Timothy. So if you want to grab a Bible, if you have one, go ahead and open up to 1 Timothy, or there are black Bibles in the seats in front of you, or the verses will be up on the screen. But we see here that the book of 1 Timothy was written by a man, Paul, and he was a very, very wise man. He wrote over half the New Testament, and he was a pastor, and he had this dramatic conversion, and Paul was writing to this young pastor, Timothy. Timothy started a church and with Paul, and then Paul kind of left and would write letters back to Timothy. And in this letter, we see that Paul talks about comparison. And Paul, I love Paul because he was pretty honest and candid when he wrote these letters oftentimes. And in this one, we see that maybe he was comparing himself. And you put yourself in Paul's shoes for a second. I think you too might compare, right? Like, you got to be around somewhat this man named Jesus. So you had the ultimate comparison person. Or maybe it was that he compared himself to Jesus. Or maybe it's that he compared himself to Jesus' closest friends. And he thought, man, I just wish I could have been one of those guys, Peter, James, or John, or something like that. But Peter was honest. Paul was honest. We're going to look now at what he had to say about comparison. And we're on page 831 of the Black Bibles, if you grabbed one of those. So Paul says this to Timothy: those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So we can't get hung up on the fact that Paul is talking about money here. What Paul is really getting at, what the larger point of this book is that pursuing success and riches according to these world standards, whether it be recognition or whether it be money, whatever the world holds up as the ultimate, chasing after those things ultimately leads us down a destructive path. In particular, according to this text, comparison invites us to lose three things in particular. And the first one is this: when we compare our lives to others, it invites us to lose joy. See, when we compare our lives to others, we lose a sense of joy, our sense of peace, of stillness, of just clarity in this life. See, the first time my car was ever broken into was just a couple of months ago. And it was right after we got married, and we went to Texas, and I don't know who, but Britt's out of town, so it's undetermined whether or not Britt left the doors unlocked to my car or if I left the doors unlocked to my car, but because she's not here, I'll take the blame. What happened was I went out of town and I came back 10 days later and I went out to my car and noticed that the back door was kind of ajar, shut but not shut all the way. And I thought, well, that's odd. And I opened it and saw a pile of tools from the back that had been put on the front or on the back seat. And I noticed my floor mats were put on the seat neatly, like they were going to steal my floor mats or something. But went to the front and noticed that they had opened my glove box and stolen everything. They stole, note to self, do not store your credit cards in your glove box. That's a rookie mistake, right? Fortunately, it was the church's credit card. Sorry, Norton. $600-$700 racked up at 7-Eleven. Like, really? Fortunately, American Express was great, but I had to make a police report and the whole thing. And they stole like everything from my car except for, get this, a couple of Christian CDs and my Bible. Like, they looked and saw they were Christian CDs and left those. I was like, thank you, appreciate it. But see, they stole everything from my car. And I was so frustrated, and they stole some of my, like, sporting stuff, and it was kind of a bummer because they stole my gloves from high school, which I was pretty bummed about, but, you know, they're just things, so, that, you know, I can get a new baseball glove or whatever. But here's the deal. Here's why I was so frustrated. Whether it wasn't because the things were gone. It was because it was a crime of opportunity. See, I left my doors unlocked, and, I mean, I might as well just put a sign on the door or on the windshield said, here, come take all my stuff. You see, when we compare ourselves to others, we lose our joy. It's a crime of opportunity. It's like we're asking ourselves to lose joy. Last year in 2013, there was an extensive study. It was the first of its kind. It was done by two major universities in Western Europe. And these scholars, these researchers, they compared, they had 584 research E's, I don't know what you call them. So 584 people that were part of this research project. And what they did is they followed these people for a number of months. And as they followed them, they checked in with them 10 times a day. And each time they checked in, they said, what are you feeling? How are you feeling? Are you happy, glad, sad, mad, whatever? And what they found was crazy. You see, they found that in the participants that were on Facebook And I'm not a hater of Facebook, believe me, but the people on Facebook, when they logged off, what do you think those people felt? Was it happy, content, fulfilled in their life? No, the overwhelming research showed that these people felt envy. And not only that, people said they were less satisfied with their life. Overwhelmingly, this isn't a small population, 584 people. That's a big study. So much so that these researchers coined a new term called Facebook envy. And it's that when we log off of Facebook, or we log off, or we compare our lives to other people, we lose our joy. There's probably a lot of reasons for that. You see, when people get on Facebook, and I'm guilty of this, and we kind of air our dirty laundry, it's not our dirtiest of laundry. There's still something that we're not sharing. And when we see those things, and we see people's like Facebook profile pictures that are edited, and it's a selfie or whatever it is, you know, what we're comparing that to is our behind the scenes. See, we know all of our faults. We know all of our guilts and things that we've done wrong, but we're comparing that against someone else's highlight reels. And that's where we lose our joy. So we see that the first thing that we do when we compare is we lose our sense of joy. The second thing when we compare is that we lose our way. It's to have a heart that's easily hijacked. And you've probably all experienced this at one point or another in life. You're doing something, whether at work and you're working on a computer, or you're just walking down the street, or you're at home, or wherever you're just working, and something pops up, or you see someone out of the corner of your eye, and you hit pause, and you just start second-guessing your life in the direction that God has you on. You start thinking, man, if I just worked a little harder, or I just did this or did that, or man, she looks good. I wish I had those jeans, and here I am in my like saggy mom jeans or something like that. You know, their kids are great. Maybe I should just turn off the TV more often and be more engaged with my kids. All of a sudden, we're just competing with somebody else, and we're making decisions. If we change our course, we lose our way. We're making decisions based on someone else's life, not the path that we're called to be on or the path that God has us on. Instead, we make our decisions based on someone else's life. The third thing that happens when we compare is that we lose hold of our faith. And this is key. This is where we invite idolatry into our life. That's a weird biblical word, but idolatry just means that we're comparing. We're worshiping false gods. Instead of worshiping God and the Spirit and Jesus, we're worshiping someone else. We're comparing our life to them. You might be sitting here today and say that, and you'd say you're not a Christian. That's great. We're really glad you're here. But there are many people who would say that there is no such thing as atheism. There's just idolatry, worshiping false gods, because everybody worships something, right? Everyone has their version of heaven, and everyone has their version of hell. You do whatever you can to get to heaven, to get away from that painful thing called hell. And so we just start worshiping false gods. Maybe it's money or freedom or pleasure or joy, whatever it is. Idolatry. And this is such a huge deal that the Ten Commandments even end with it. We're not going to go to it, but in the Old Testament, God ends the ninth commandment with this, "Thou shall not covet." And we're like, what? What does covet mean? Well, again, it's another biblical word, and really it boils down to thou shall not, you shall not compare. And the reason that God ends the Ten Commandments with this commandment not to compare is so that we can walk away from comparison, because he has a path for us. Not someone else's life, not someone else's belongings or body shape or clothes or career choice. The less joy you and I have, with our own career, our own social status, is a sense that we're losing a hold of our faith, losing a hold of everything that we own and the path that God has us on. We lose our own personality, the thing that God gave each one of us as a gift when we compare. The good news is that there's a solution to comparison. There's another way in this life. Instead of running in this circle of comparison, there's another way. And thankfully, it isn't to just try harder or to stop comparing or to pull up harder on your bootstraps. No. What God knows is that comparison is inevitable. He knows that we were born and that we're gonna compare. We need to gauge ourselves against something in order to know whether we're being faithful or to know whether or not we're being successful in life. And so what God invites us to do, it's not to stop comparing as if we just put blinders on and just walk through life not looking at anyone. No, God invites us to shift our point of comparison. Rather than living our lives looking around at others and seeing what they're doing in order to know whether we're being faithful or successful in life, followers of Jesus, what we have the opportunity to do is shift our point of comparison and focus. We shift it to who we are, apart, who we were apart from Jesus. We look back on who we were apart from Jesus, and we don't compare with others. We don't compare what the latest trend is on Twitter or whatever. We compare with how far we've come in Christ. That's why if you read the Bible, it says time and time again, think of who you once were, or look back to who you were and what I did for you. God says this over and over and over again in Scripture. Even if you're not as rich as you want to be, or not as beautiful as you want to be, or successful as you want to be, whatever it is, when you compare back to who you were apart from Christ, we will always realize that we are more loved, more forgiving, and more grace-filled than we ever deserved. When couples reach that pivotal anniversary, maybe it's 20 or 25 or 30 years, oftentimes they do a renewal of their vows. And it's really neat. They might stand up here with a pastor and part of their friends and their family and their community of faith. And when they get up here, they're looking back on their life, on their relationship, on what drew them to marry the person they're standing up there with. We don't, like, imagine this. Imagine if the Joneses were up here renewing their vows and we invited the Smiths up here to do a one-to-one comparison 25 years into marriage, right? Like, what if we sat here and we're like, I forgot, the Joneses, right? The Joneses and the Smiths. And so the pastor's like, well, the Smiths have three kids and you've always wanted three kids, but you only have two. Well, they got you there. Or, you know, the Joneses, they're out of debt and saving for retirement. And you, well, you're still paying off your student loans 25 years later. But man, your kids, they don't shove ketchup up each other's noses, so you got them there. No, we wouldn't do that, right? That would be weird. No, we bring this family, the Joneses, up, and we say, like, let's renew our vows. Let's look back on our own lives. Look back on what brought you together, that love and that respect and that submission we talked about. To compare yourselves with others, to compare to the sides and look constantly to other people is to trade the gift of where we are and who we are today. We need to shift our point of comparison. That's why we here at New Denver Church, on a regular basis, we take communion. And so we can come forward and ask forgiveness and remember Jesus who was crucified for us so that we can remember our life apart from him, or we sing songs of worship or praise and thanking God for the work that he's done in each of our lives. We do those things so that we can see how far we've come in Christ, so that we can be, or so that we can be on this path that's secure with joy and peace. When we live in that place, as Paul says, something beautiful happens. And this is the point of today, is when we give up comparison, we're invited into taking up contentment. In fact, Paul says that getting to that place of contentment, that should be our actual goal in life. Getting to a place of contentment or to peace with who you are and where you are, no matter what your circumstances are in light of God, that should be our ultimate goal, contentment. As we come to a close today, listen to what Paul says again in 1 Timothy. This was a few verses prior to the ones that we just looked at. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Paul's point is this. If we can get to a point in our lives where we give up comparison and take up contentment, where you're saying, I know I'm right with God, and I might fall short from time to time, but everything else in my life is just simply icing on this undeserved life that I've been given by God. I've got food. I've got clothing. I don't even deserve that. But if we can get to that place, then we win. And this Lent series that we're doing is we're going to look at each week for the next 6 weeks, an area of our life that we can give up and take up. Sure, some of us might have given up candy and taken up more vegetables or whatever it might be, but there's maybe some deeper issues in our life. And I suspect that many of us can relate to this idea of comparison. And what Paul is inviting us to do, and what I'm inviting each of us, you and me, to do, is to give up comparison and take up contentment. Because when we do that, that's better than anything in this world. That's better than being a good mom. It's better than being recognized for your talents or being the best pastor in the world or the funniest person in your workplace. That's better than anything you and I can dream of when we take up this place of contentment. You can't get there by looking at others. The only way that we can get there is by looking back on our life apart from Christ. So my question to close today is this. What will it take for us to get there? What will it take for us to give up comparison? For some of us, it's really, really practical. We have our eyes on way too many other people. I was guilty of this, and so some of us, we need to, if we're socially connected on the internet, maybe we just need to give it up for a period of time. Maybe instead of checking Facebook 999 times today, maybe just check it 899 times or something like that. And we have our eyes on too many people. So a practical step is to just limit our time on the internet. Limit our time on social media. Maybe for many of us, it's creating more avenues for God to speak into our lives. It's deciding to read our Bible each morning or each night. It's to make time throughout our day to pray, to connect with God, to realize what he has to say about our lives. Or maybe it's the people that we hang out with. Maybe your circle of friends are great people and they're nice people and they would do anything in the world for you, but maybe you're constantly comparing yourselves to one another, how much money you're making, how much you have, or things like that. Maybe it's time to relook at your sphere of friends. Maybe it's time to join a missional community, as Alex talked about, and they're not perfect, it's just people, but maybe in those settings, we can give up comparison and take up contentment. Maybe if you're a skeptic, maybe it's realizing for the first time that God is doing something in your life. Maybe it's time to give up that worldly pursuit of money and doing good things and feeling good about yourself and take up trust in Jesus. Realizing there's more to life than comparing your friends on LinkedIn, and maybe it's you just feeling a sense of contentment with who you are in Christ. And imagine your life if you did this. Imagine what it would look like in life to just stop this endless pursuit of comparison and taking up contentment. We'd get more sleep at night, probably. We'd have more time for the loved ones in our life, for our friends. We'd have more love and joy. So as we close service today, I can think of no better way than to celebrate communion. And we do this once a month at New Denver Church, but I think it's fitting today as we're thinking about or thinking through the lens of giving up comparison and taking up contentment, that we take communion. And thousands of years ago, the night before Jesus was crucified, or betrayed and crucified, he had a dinner with his friends and some of his closest followers, and they were sitting there eating a meal together, and he took the loaf of bread and he broke it, and he said, "Every time you do this, remember me, my body, which was broken for you." And then he took the glass or the cup of wine, and he stood up and he held that up, and he said, "Each time you drink this, remember my blood, the blood of the new covenant, which is poured out for you." And so today, as you come forward to take communion, I just invite you to think about who you are and to think about your life apart from Christ. And invite you, as the band, go ahead, you can come on up. Invite you to give up comparison and take up contentment. And so when you're ready, as Adam and the band plays this song, I just invite you to slip out of your seat and come forward and take the bread and just rip off a little piece and dip it in the juice or the wine, and you can eat it there. You can go back to your seat and eat it. But as you do that, just remember your life apart from Jesus. And remember that comparison is awful. We lose our joy, lose our way, lose our faith, and invite you to take up contentment.